A crossover is...
Crossover dribble.
Sing for the crossover.
Kyrie Irving. Crossover in the lane.
One of the most famous crossovers of all time.
Behind the back, an ankle breaker on Chris Paul.
Crossovers.
Crossover.
Off to the double crossover.
The crossover continues to evolve.
Crossover time, Gary Sharp Show starting here. Of course, featuring George as always. We're just talking vaccinations. And it's funny, the older you are, right? Experience obviously comes with everything the older you get. But you also go through things that younger people don't necessarily have to go through. And then when they do, they get very stressed out. And you're like, what do you mean? I mean, when I was growing up, you had to go get a vaccine shot for everything. Then I went to the Army. And every time you left the country, they gave you a billion shots, including something called, as I told George, the Coke can, which comes out of the refrigerator. Takes about 5 minutes to give you the shot because it's so thick. And they shoot you in the butt with one of them, and you can't even walk. That's vaccinations, baby. This is nothing.
Well, I can tell you that I did not get a shot in the butt
yesterday. You didn't get one in the butt? Buttocks?
Nope.
they give you half of them in the butt and half in your arm because you couldn't take all of them in your arm. And they give you it's the loaded gun. With the air compressor, it goes like that.
Well,
pretty scary.
I did a little personal business with Johnson & Johnson yesterday.
And nice work.
After waking up this morning, I may go online and give them a pretty good review on Yelp.
Do you feel okay?
Yes.
Good, good, good. Good to hear.
Well, so for people that are just tuning in,
I
got the Johnson & Johnson shot yesterday.
Yes.
And as I like to talk to people, I sat there and talked for a long time with the Creighton Pharmacy graduate, Alexander, and we were talking about vaccinations. And because I said, I just read, George and I were talking about it before I left the studio yesterday off air. I said, you know, in Colorado, they shut down a site, a Johnson & Johnson site. And so, you know, you go in there and first of all, they asked if they, you know, left or right arm. I thought it was always in the left.
No, it's usually the dominant arm, so you're continually to work it all day, so it kicks the soreness out.
So the person at the pharmacy asked, and I said, okay, left. Mm-hmm. So I went in there, and so, you know, we're just chatting, boom, it's, you know, it's over. And
it's
I'm
quick,
like,
yeah.
Okay. But he said, you know, all of these discussions about people that are, you know, experiencing like soreness in their arm or a little bit of swelling, he goes, you can tell people in this country haven't had vaccinations in a long time. He goes, if you got a flu shot, he goes, you might still get the same kind of thing. He goes, but all of these discussions about, you know, after effects of a vaccination, he goes, first of all, that's good in some cases because your body is starting to, but he goes, people that's used to be normal. You know,
yes.
When you had to go get more vaccinations. Right. And I said, well, you know what? I was probably, I don't remember any of the vaccinations I got. And I'm too young when they used to give you the vaccination that left the
little star in your arm. Yeah, I'm about 2 years after that. My sisters all have it. But this whole process is weird because the amount of people this is tested on before it ever gets to us, if you think about it that way, if it was something that was really going to harm you, the amount of deaths that would have happened to that group of people, it wouldn't be out here. So they've tested all this on people. Hundreds of thousands of people have gone through the trials and the tests so we could have it. So go get the damn shot if you want. If you don't, that's fine. But yeah, the soreness is normal. Now, I will tell you that I had the Pfizer. Damon had the Pfizer. Shane had the Moderna.
Yeah.
Shane was really rocked the day after it. Sleepy, didn't feel good. I went and got my pants hemmed yesterday because I was going to a thing. The lady who was there got the Moderna. She also had a really bad reaction the day after. Fever, in the bed, feeling bad, feeling achy. I think the Moderna gets you with the first one, but the Pfizer gets you with the second one.
That's what I've heard.
That's what I've heard. And the Johnson & Johnson, just from the people I talked to in Louisiana that were getting it, it was pretty rough for them, but you're saying it didn't, nothing. So
just other than, you know, there's a little bit of soreness.
Yeah.
But that's to be expected.
Yeah, they stuck a needle in your arm.
Slept well. It didn't fix my pain in my right shoulder, but.
You should have got the shot in your right shoulder. See what happens.
I did ask. I said, Alexander, is there anything else I can just get while I'm here? You know, can you take care of this? I got a little soreness in the shoulder that's been bothering me for 8 months. And he said, he looked around his office and he went, no.
Nah. Did you use that cream I gave you? Did you put that on there?
Yeah.
Didn't work?
No, I think I broke something.
You think you know, I bet you, and we were talking about this the other day with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the three things that happen to you the most in your shoulder is the capsule or the labrum, yeah. Right? Damaging the tendon, or for a lot of people, it's simply tearing the ligament. I don't think any of those are the ones. I think you'd be hard to get to arm over your shoulder. Can you get it over your head?
Yeah, I can golf. So I've been, okay. I've been out golfing for the last couple weeks.
I bet it's a labrum. I bet it's in there, and so you have aching and you have some soreness, but the range of movement's still good.
Yeah, I just don't want to go to the doctor and admit, well, where do you think this happened? Well,
I fell out of bed.
Back in the fall, I fell out of bed, and I think I tried to brace myself.
Yeah,
I think I'll pass on that.
It also could have been just a simple impingement, and you've never got the PT to get it
fixed.
Yeah,
you know, also, when I was in high school, I threw about 98 miles an hour.
That'll cause problems. That'll cause problems on your shoulder. You know, God didn't make you to throw the ball overhand.
I had, remember there was a run of pitchers out of Texas that were appearing on the cover of SI? Remember Todd Van Poppel?
Sure, very well. Also a great hitter.
But you remember John Peters? There was a name from, was he from Brenham? And he threw like 98, 99. He was a cover boy of Sports Illustrated and then blew out his arm. There was the run of Texas college pitchers under Cliff Gustafson that he ruined their arms. Like, Clemens threw it. Look, go back and look at, like, college pitchers in the 80s, and look at how many innings they threw in a year.
Yeah.
Absolutely destroyed their arms.
The one that's famous, of course, close to me is Ben McDonald. And not only did Ben McDonald throw 9 in a game for LSU, he came back the next day and relieved. And then remember, he turned around and went straight to the Olympics.
Uh-huh.
After throwing all those innings he threw, he had then turned around and go to Olympics. He was never the same after that.
And then for the longest time, it's still prevalent, but not as strong because I think college coaches have more responsibility, is you would convince kids that were in high school that were pitchers not to go to college because X, Y, and Z coach would ruin their arm. They would go and throw 200-plus innings in college.
Yep.
And so that's how scouts were able to get a lot of high school pitchers to say, nah, I'm not going to college.
Sure.
They want a fresh arm instead of a used arm. But now the pitching coaches in college are better. And again, I think college coaches are a little bit more responsible, unlike Cliff Gustafson, who ruined a lot of arms.
Well, if you remember one of the big conversations that happened, this was probably like 2008, 2009, Nolan Ryan comes out and he starts talking about throwing more. He's like, this whole idea of watching your arm, he's like, it's about throwing more. It's about getting stretched out. That's how you stay healthy. And I know a lot of college programs started looking more into that. A lot of more long tossing, trying to get your arm, throwing 2 days after you throw. Yeah. So not having a real mound, but it's like a workout on the mound. Then have your midweek. And then so actually throwing more than you were throwing before is better. That's what the theory was.
And it's about what are you throwing? I mean, a guy could throw
140
pitches in a game and his arm feels good because he didn't stress out his arm.
If it's a stressful 100 pitches opposed to just being one where you're cruising. That guy just hit a putt. Who was it? It was Justin Rose. Justin Rose hit a putt that went up to about 5 feet from the cup. It turned around and went back 40 feet away from it. Look how far that ball went back. It got within 4 feet of the cup, turned around and went back. That's how big the slope is on that green. That was incredible. He's already dropped one shot. He's 6 under. He's 6 under now. I think this is for par here now.
With everybody that struggled yesterday, it makes me appreciate his round even more, especially the back nine where he turned things around.
You could say legitimately it's the greatest round, certainly definitely back nine, in the history of the modern Masters. There hasn't been a round like that since 1939 where a guy went 9 under in the back nine or 10 under. He was 2 over and ended up 7 under, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. Not here. And people don't land it close on 17 or do what he did on 12 or do what he did on 14. He was just incredible.
And you don't know how his round goes if on 8.
That ball doesn't bounce.
Yeah. If 8 continues his struggles, then he probably is not able to turn it around on the back 9.
Yep.
But the way that he played, considering how firm and fast the greens are, I mean, there's some of these greens that don't even have grass on them.
Yeah.
And then he had the wind yesterday.
Which died down during his run, by the way.
His day was exceptional when there were also, 12 guys that were above par.
Yeah.
There were only, 3 in the 60s. That's why, you can't, the Masters is this way. You can't win it on Thursday, but you can certainly lose it on Thursday.
Definitely.
So he's put himself in a great position. And he'll come back to the pack a little bit today, but he's been here before. We'll see if he's learned his lesson of leading on Thursdays. But I'll tell you a guy that saved himself yesterday, because he could have lost the tournament on Thursday with Jordan Spieth.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, Spieth was on the roller coaster that a lot of people were on, but he saved himself at the end, and he still got a shot.
How many guys had putts that went off the green, into the water, or down the hill? I mean, it was incredible the amount of putts.
How about an eagle putt?
Yeah.
You're putting for eagle, and the next thing you know, the ball's wet.
Yeah. Well, the one eagle that he made, that ball was going 12, 15 miles an hour. If it doesn't hit the stick, It's still rolling.
Well, let's be honest. If you look at, and usually after day one, people that are in the top 10 or top 12,
yeah,
they've got a shot to be winning on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I think only Tiger Woods is the only one that's come from outside of that area. There's a lot of alphabet names that are in there. Like people you don't recognize, that Sunday could be just a...
Like some debutantes?
Justin Rose is a good player. He wasn't playing exceptionally well coming into this, but he's a good player.
He wasn't playing at all coming into this.
He doesn't do anything for me on Sunday. Don't ruin that for me. On the back nine on Sunday, I just got a bunch of no-names.
And he was there against Sergio. He was there, and they went into extra holes, and ended up losing to Sergio, and Sergio made some decent shots to win it. Justin Rose has got the talent, but that thinks the problem is he hasn't played in, 2 months or whatever because of the back? I think that catches up to you. Yes, the adrenaline on day one, you feel great. It's just great to be out there again. You got hot. When Saturday rolls around and you've already played 36 holes and that back starts to tighten up, I think that's where he's going to struggle. Give me one of these younger guys who is more like 27 to 31, 32. That's the guys who I think one of those guys is going to win it.
Well, he's putting bogey.
Yeah, that ball that rolled all the way back was his birdie putt. And then this is for bogey. He made it.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Saved himself.
I thought he was going to be 500, but he stayed at 600. It's a big shot for him. But, you've had a couple guys this morning already. Leishman got off to a quick start, went 3 under. Weisenberger, whoever that guy is. Is he still up there? Yeah, now he's in second place. Weisenberger.
Man, if I would have told you 5 years ago that Patrick Reed might win 2 green jackets in 4 years, you would call me a lot of names.
Because we didn't like him or we didn't like his game?
Well, you would have thought his game would not have done well at Augusta.
He used to not be able to hold together. He let things get to him. It got under his skin. All of a sudden he played worse. But yeah, I don't know what he did. Maybe getting married or whatever else calmed him down, but he and John Rahm both now are much calmer when things aren't going well.
See, I thought Rahm would play just a little. Whoa.
He's okay where he is. I think he's okay where
because
he is.
Because now he doesn't have to worry about, okay, am I going to be able to make it through the whole round? Am I going to get the call that I'm about to become a father?
Yep. Like Danny Willett. When Danny Willett won, they had the baby like 3 days before. He goes to Augusta late, just like Rahm got there a day late. And we know what happened for him on the weekend and how he ended up winning it. Your guy yesterday we were talking about who I said cannot putt on these greens is, what's his name? The guy with the...
Patrick?
No, the dude with the big drive.
DeChambeau?
DeChambeau. He cannot putt on these greens.
Not my guy.
Well, we were just talking about who guys maybe would have a chance, and I was like, I don't think he ends up making the cut. But he can't putt on these greens. He's allergic to them.
Well, I think this course gets to him between the ears.
That's true.
I mean...
That is true.
He had a meltdown.
Put a lot of pressure on himself.
He actually
probably
got off to a good start, and then he got on the struggle bus. And at Augusta, it's tough to get off of.
Well, he couldn't make birdies or even par on a par five. The main thing he should be good at hitting the ball as far as is getting on the green in two or three, and he couldn't even do that. But then he also couldn't putt.
So there's another part of yesterday with Answer that kind of got screwed.
I hated that. Grounding his club.
I'm thinking of the worst sports fans that are out there. Is there anybody worse than the person that calls a golf tip line to say, hey, you might want to look at this?
George.
You have to.
What do snitches get?
Stitches.
Yeah, that's what should happen. We should find that person and get them.
So, but who?
Because I have Answer in the top five.
Who watching at home?
Saw that?
Like,
I have no idea.
You know what? Let me, because you have to zoom in.
Yeah, that's what it
was. You have to zoom in like times 1,000.
Yeah. He didn't swing through it. He kind of set it down on it a little bit. You can barely see it.
There's a lot to that. So they don't have a rules official with every single golfer.
Right.
But if you would have known that you just got penalized, that would have changed how you played
the rest of the
rest of the way.
I agree.
Instead of 13 hours later, he finds out.
Yeah.
So let's find. You know what? Answer should find out. Who called into the tip line and go to their business
and watch
and
them
watch
do
them,
their
and then anytime they screw up,
yeah,
or they
OSHA,
violate a rule,
right?
Yes,
call
but
OSHA.
Who sits at home and says, "Well, I'm going to be calling the
That's
PGA."
Golf That's golf fans, man. It is. Obviously, one of the few, much like tennis, where you call your own fouls, you call your own violations, right? And so people are big sticklers about it. They really are. That sucks though, because I like him, and he had. Good momentum going, and that two shot taken away from him. What is he now, 2 over? Instead of being even?
Mm-hmm.
I still think he's got a shot to be in the top 10 or top 20 because he's such a great second shot hitter of the golf ball. I still think he's going to do well.
What do we think, George, of the fan when you go to a game that's like couple of rows in front of you and stands up and turns around to everybody else and goes, "Everybody stand up! Stand up, let's go!" That would be on the list.
I hate the wave, people. I'm with them. Yep. I hate the wave. I've never liked... Listen,
that's definitely
the wave
on the
was
list.
Cool in 1979 when the Seahawks were in the old kingdom and they came up with it. It probably was still cool into the mid-80s when they were reversing the wave or doing the slow motion wave. We're 40 years, 30 yards past the years that passed. Let's get rid of the wave. Hate the wave.
George, put a list here together. Number one is the person that calls the golf tip line. We'll put the wave and the person that turns around and tells everybody to stand up and cheer.
They're on there.
The person that tells everybody to sit down.
Oh, the old people over the Memorial Stadium?
Uh-huh.
Down in front guy?
Sit down!
Down in front guy.
Well, no, here. If
how about that's a concert? Only... Is it the same? Is a concert the same as a sporting event?
Yes.
Same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but it kind of is a momentum when you stand up. It's just like a sporting event.
Everybody's
like
got
to
go.
Bottom, at the bottom, when they start to stand up, everybody stands everybody's up because go. You feel Agreed. Like it's almost natural because you feel like you won't be able to see.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if somebody is just standing up and it's the only person in your section,
right.
you have every right to tell them to sit down.
Okay. I watch the monitor. If everybody stands up and I don't feel like it, I just look at the monitor. I have no problem with that. I'll go to the monitor in a minute if I don't want to stand up. But I don't get mad at the people for standing up. I do if we're going to branch out from sports. I do get mad at the person who tells the person in the movie theater, the guy on the screen or the woman on the screen, you know, to watch out for stuff. There's something happening. You got to go to the right movie theaters. And you get the person who's like, you don't want to do that. I told you shouldn't have gone in there. Why?
Out loud?
Out
Maybe they're loud. Maybe they're just too nice in Omaha.
Out loud.
That's why I don't like scary movies, because I talk back to I'm like, you're stupid.
Okay.
You're stupid. I can't.
You say that? Jungle Fever. Not a scary movie. I was in Atlanta watching that movie, and I distinctly remember going, that's why you mess them white women. That's why you where you at now. Because of them white women. The whole movie. And people are like, yeah, you're right, girl. That's why you shouldn't have been messing with her. And she Italian, too? You know, they don't like black people. That was in Atlanta. Downtown. Yeah, 91, maybe 92.
That's on brand.
Yeah, that happens.
People in Omaha are way too nice then. The people that talk in the theater.
Yeah. Well, and there is something, though, about getting... So there are people that are talking about this Godzilla King Kong movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're watching it on TV, and that's great. That's one of those movies that you need to watch as a communal experience. You need everybody to be like, or cheering for something to happen. It makes the movie feel... different. We've all seen Avengers Endgame, right?
Yep.
Right. Okay. So, in the scene where the on your left thing happens, right, and as people realize what's happening throughout the theater, that is part of the feeling, because the that whole thing that builds up, it's important. That's why we can't lose theaters, because some movies need that, or when. Captain America grabs Mjolnir when he grabs the hammer. And everybody's like, oh my God, he grabbed the hammer. That we need that kind of stuff. That's what we're missing when we
I've been to a movie in a while where, and I have been to them, probably we all have, where people clap.
At the end?
When it's in.
The last one I went to like that was, let me think. It might have been Endgame. Because I know everybody was, it might have been Endgame. Because you know how they show at the very end of the movie, they're showing the little signatures of all the people who were the original Avengers.
Yep.
And then at the very end, they do the hammer, and it's the hammering for Tony from the original movie. And I'm pretty sure after that, everybody that stayed around for it was clapping. But it's usually, you know, an Academy Award kind of movie when it happens.
See, I think there's some movies that when you leave, you have questions. And as you're, if you... went there with somebody else, you walk out of the theater and you're talking to each other.
Uh-huh.
They should have like a special, like those kind of movies, they should have like a special room that when the movie's over, you can go in there and everybody can discuss what you just saw.
Did you see Unfaithful?
Yes.
So that's a perfect one. You leave Unfaithful, you're with a group of people, you're like, you think they went into the police station?
Yeah.
Or you think he forgave her? Or that's one of those movies where there's so much discussion after it happened.
Yeah, they should just, if you want to go into the...
talk about it.
On the talk about it room. Yeah. You can discuss because I got questions.
Yes, I have questions. I do, that group of people you're talking about with the sports fans, the person that drives me crazy, there's two people in for the movie part of it. It's the person who gets so mad that the book that everything that was in the book isn't in the movie. Mm-hmm. And they do have to realize the movie is only 2 hours long. And then the person who is trying to take a sci-fi or fantasy adventure movie and make it real. They're like, well, how did that happen? How did they get from there to there that fast? It's a movie. Or it's a TV show like Game of Thrones when they were trying to get it done because it cost so much money. And they're like, well, it used to take 3 episodes to go from Winter Rose to blah, blah, blah. Well, now it doesn't because they don't have time. Now they're just there. Accept it.
Yeah, that's another one that drives me nuts. Wouldn't you like to, if you were an actor or an actress in one of these movies, and I know it does happen, you, in disguise, sneak into a theater and watch the movie that you're in to hear people's reactions or discussions.
I think there are people, there are actors and directors and producers that do that.
I would.
They actually sit there, obviously they watch the focus group, but then they go to the theater early on that first week to hear what they think about it. I think they do it. That's the only way to experience it. The only way to really believe if your movie is good is the great story, Bruce Lee. We just talked about him yesterday. Bruce Lee is at his first premiere in San Francisco for his first movie, and he's sitting there, and he doesn't know what to expect. And at the very end, it's just absolutely silent. And they're like, oh, my God, we made it's a bust. And everybody just explodes after everything is done. And they realize, okay, this works. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just need that. You need that experience to tell you how good your movie is.
Now, movie critics, and there aren't, unfortunately, there's not as many of them as there used to be, like in newspapers and things like that.
Right.
Have you ever heard El Kent tell the story of, and maybe this has changed a little bit, but I asked him one day, I said, how do you review these movies? And he said, well, you know, I go into a viewing room and I'll watch like 2 or 3 movies at a time. Like on a Tuesday, they come out on Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, how do you pay attention? Because you got to take notes. You got to take notes the whole time on what's going on. And he said, well, it struggled at first because I wanted to just watch the movie instead of like, also it's part of my job.
Yeah.
I don't think I could be a movie critic. Well, I just don't, because I want to watch the movie. I'd have to watch it twice to do a good job as a movie critic. Watch it one time through where you just watch it normal.
Yeah.
And then the next time you start, you know, you take notes.
I mean, it depends who, like Micah Mertes, who was over at the newspaper, Micah had the ability to remember everything he saw. Like we'd have a conversation about a movie a couple days. Tuesdays and Thursdays are the days that they go and watch the movies. And he would just remember all of it. I think it depends on who you are. Bob wrote his stuff out. Bob Fischbach wrote everything out that he was going to say about his movie before I even talked to him to kind of have everything down and remember it. I think it depends who you are. But I think the hardest part of being a movie critic is seeing bad movies. I know being a food critic, the hardest part is going and getting bad food. Because what do you say? This sucked. I mean, you got to try to find a way to phrase it in the right way to explain why it's not good. I used to always ask Ken, I go, was this a 45? It's a 9mm? It's a 50 cal? I mean, what kind of bullet are you taking to go see this movie for us when it's bad?
And some have a lot of power
where they
can say a movie sucks and it will. You might have been all fired up on Monday to go to it. You read the review on Thursday. Yeah. You're like, nope, I'm good. I'm good. I mean, look at like Siskel and Ebert, how big they became.
Yeah, and they were wrong, in my opinion, about some. You can go back on YouTube and you can find movies they reviewed that they hammered, which were really end up being really good movies, but they just didn't like the style. Also, from what I understand, you had to cater to those guys.
Yes.
Like you had to be really nice to them, send them gifts and things for them to necessarily like your product at times. So,
and they would hammer you if you did not have a previewing.
Yes. If they had to go to the real theater to watch it.
Because that immediately said to them, the movie's not very good.
Right. But sometimes you just don't want. Sometimes you got a surprise that you want to hold. For example, The Sixth Sense.
Uh-huh.
They didn't screen that. But if I remember correctly, the story, they didn't screen that because they didn't want the leak out. They didn't want anybody to talk about it because it was so important
to the viewing of the movie.
So,
well, if I'm going to go to a movie and I like somebody that's in it or I like the preview.
Yeah.
I'm still going to go.
Yeah, I don't
know
that
there's any critic that has said, hey, this movie is awful. It gets a 1 out of 5. I wouldn't go. Then I say, okay, I'm not going.
You know what's funny about the food thing is you can give a restaurant a poor review, but if the picture in the paper looks good, people will still go.
Yes.
We found that. I talked to Sarah about it before. For some reason, if it looks good, they won't even read the review. They'll just go and check it out because of the picture. So... it's weird how that works. Same thing true about political ads. Remember the great story about Ronald Reagan? They have this Plickler just killing him for his whole first 4 years in office, all these things he did. But in the pictures, he's like holding a baby and he's like smiling. And they asked people afterwards, I'm like, well, all we remember is him holding the baby and smiling. We don't remember any of that stuff that was said about him. So now that's why words became a big part of political ads. So people will read it more than they'll listen. That was an interesting story from back in college.
Yep. Dude, you know what would be the best is if you were a movie reviewer and a food critic as well.
Doing both of them?
If you're able to cover both of those.
Not dinner and a movie.
There you go.
I bet you they probably had it.
That would be a great thing. You are the dinner and a movie critic.
Yeah. I used to do that every Thursday on the radio. I did dinner and a movie, and I would bring in movie review, obviously, and I'd bring in the food critic, and we'd do it back to back. Certain stations didn't like the idea of that, so they wanted me to stop it. But it's good. Men want to know where to go and take their women. I'm from a sports radio. Sometimes women want to know where to go, the best place to go eat. And together, you get both groups of people who are usually going to go out together on Friday or Saturday, and Thursday is a good time to do it.
Yep.
No, I think it's a very valuable thing. I do miss the fact, as you just mentioned, that you don't have the movie critics you used to have. They eliminate that position. It's one of them that they just don't think they need anymore, along with the editorial cartoonists and sometimes the food reviewer and everything else.
Well, everything. I mean, you still have movie critics, but it's one person that's syndicated and they're in 10 different newspapers.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
That's Siskel and Ebert, that run they had. I mean, two guys that are working at competing papers in Chicago have their own television show that I remember growing up. I vaguely recall it was at 6:30 on Saturday nights.
At the movies?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. The music was
thumbs
so
up
distinctive.
Or thumbs down.
How distinctive was that music?
Mm-hmm.
It was so distinct. As soon as it started, you're like, okay, At the Movies is coming on. And they would show you the clips first of the movies they were going to review. And so you'd wait to see if it was one that you wanted to see for the clips. Then you watch the half an hour show. And you're right. Two competing papers, two guys that are working together, and they became as powerful as anyone in Hollywood for that, I don't know, 8-10 years. Mm-hmm. They were that powerful to review your movie, one, and then give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. And it's funny, in Hollywood Shuffle, they parodied that. They snuck it. It's called sneaking into the movies.
Yeah.
And they gave it the finger. We give that movie the finger. Still hilarious. Still
thumbs up or thumbs down. Rest in peace, Siskel and Ebert.
Yes, sir. Both of them passed away.
All right. Well, we'll see if what happens in the theaters this weekend. Are you going to go see the Bob Odenkirk movie?
It looks great. I think that's a movie I'm going to watch on TV. Because that one you can watch on TV. That's one I would watch. I had to go see Godzilla and Kong in the theater. We saw it when we were in Vegas with a bunch of kids. We all went, got 8 tickets in a row.
Did you go to the theater on the Strip?
We did not. We ended up going to someplace called Town Hall.
Mm-hmm.
It's nicer and newer. The Orleans one, I looked at going there, but according to the people who live there, it's not in great shape. So that's why we didn't go there. We went to this other town. It was only 10 minutes away from the airport, too. So we went right from there to the airport, so it was perfect timing. But there's a lot of choices. There are a lot of theaters that are open there, more than I thought there would be. Because Vegas it's opening slowly, but the parts that are open, there's a lot of people.
What'd you think of the world's largest Roomba?
The world's largest Roomba looks perfect for the Raiders. Like if you were going to just put up a picture of a stadium and say who plays there, I would say the Raiders. It looks like the Raiders. It's pretty cool. We went there. We drove by the UFC site, their training facility. Yeah. We did that. We went over to where the Vegas Knights do their practicing because their kids, one of the people that we were with, their kids are in a junior league and they actually practice there too and play games there, which was nice. Just kind of go see it. There's also the single A baseball field that's right behind it.
Triple A.
Is it Triple A?
Yeah.
Who is that?
It is.
Because the Mets left Vegas.
They've switched. Are they still the Nationals? They may.
That far away?
Well, because when they went from the Mets, they went to the Nationals.
Okay.
I think they may have changed.
Is it Oakland?
I don't know. Their affiliation may have changed.
By the way, it's so small, it does not look like a Triple A stadium.
Are you talking about in Henderson?
Not in Henderson. No, it's right outside of Vegas.
Oh.
It's where we went to, and there's the whole facility for the hockey, and right behind it, I thought it was single A baseball. There's the baseball field behind it. It's got the signs, got the pictures. I wish I didn't get very close to it to see what the actual mascot was.
Because I think that's the minor league stadium because they built a brand new one a couple of years ago. They used to be, their minor league stadium used to be connected to the convention center. And it was really old.
This is not by the convention center.
So that was the old one. That was the old one. And then they built a brand new one.
Oh, okay.
That's really, really nice. I mean, that's a favorite trip of many AAA teams is to go to Vegas.
Oh yeah, I know that.
The thing about Vegas, and you know, it helps when the Knights show up and they're successful right away.
Exactly.
Is how big a hockey community that Vegas has become, and not only just NHL the way they follow that team, but also youth hockey, and they brought their American Hockey League team into Henderson, and they've got a new facility.
Yeah, one of the things they did was they only had, according to people who were telling me about this, they only had really two sheets of ice to play on.
Mm-hmm.
And when Las Vegas got there, they opened their facility, allowed Little League to play there. And he said since then, there's like 12.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two competing, kind of like here with basketball, there's two competing leagues that don't agree on anything. And so they're kind of always fighting. And they fight for ice time and everything else. It's pretty cool.
If you're into hockey, that is a bucket list to go to an NHL game there. I mean, it's everything about Vegas.
They're everywhere you go, people have their gear on.
Mm-hmm.
And all different colors, not just the color. Like I saw green, I saw black, I saw blue, I saw red. Everybody's got Vegas Knights stuff on. They won them over. And like you said, it helped that they won right away, obviously. But Vegas seems like the kind of town that would immediately grasp on any major
and again,
league.
It's everything that Vegas should be, that you think Vegas is, they wrap it around a hockey game. You ever been to a UNLV basketball game?
At Thomas and Mack.
Oh, I mean, you might as well be at a show on the Strip.
Yeah.
They got fireworks. They got dancers.
Well, their cheerleaders are dancers. Yeah.
They've done a couple games there. I'm like, whoa. I mean.
When they came here for the first two rounds, I was like, these are professionals. These aren't regular cheerleaders. This is not a regular Ritz cracker. These are professionals. They know what they're doing.
And we're all like, well, damn, those girls can dance.
I don't think I've ever use the phrase Rich Cracker, but I may now.
Me either. Yeah,
that's new.
Hold on. Let me get a 20. I know I'm 51 years old, but that's Eddie Murphy.
But I've never referred to
him. Yeah, I've never
seen Eddie Murphy talking about not having sex for a long time.
Bingo.
And he's like, you know, it's not the regular, you know, Ritz. This is not a regular saltines. This is a Ritz Cracker. It's like when a man hasn't had anything to drink and you give him a glass of water.
Right.
You can go back and watch Delirious right now. In 2021, and you will still be rolling.
Still holds up.
You will still be rolling. You may not get all the jokes, but the idea for the ice cream man, the idea for the hamburger, not a McDonald's burger, the idea for the woman falling down the stairs, all of that. The whole honeymooners.
Honeymooners.
Yes.
All that, again, not appropriate for 2021 in a lot of places, still hilarious.
I watched it during the pandemic, like during the first 2 months.
Yeah.
And still holds up.
See, that show's older than him.
In tears.
And it's still funny. Yeah.
Man. Well, and people like Eddie Murphy, whether it be YouTube or Netflix, will keep him alive for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
He should do, now that he's kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't say making a comeback, but he's starting to get back more into the public eye and doing movies and things.
It is really a comeback.
He should do, like, Delirious 2 and wear the same red suit.
Well, they've been trying to get him. Netflix has been trying to get him to do a stand-up for 4 or 5 years. He agreed to do the show with Jerry Seinfeld, the coffee comedians in the car thing. He agreed to do that. They had the conversation afterwards. And he has rumored to have signed a contract to do stand-up for the first time in 20 years for them. And when that happens, that it's going to be huge.
But see, if I'm going to watch Eddie Murphy do stand-up now, I'm going to want more of his old stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I want him to do
Ice
Cream Man.
I think that's what he'll give us.
If I'm going to go watch Eddie Murphy at
the
Orpheum, I want Ice Cream Man.
He's not going to repeat stuff.
But some, like Ice Cream Man, Eddie Murphy, whenever he does stand-up, has to do Ice Cream Man.
See, he's not going to make that. Ice Cream Man! Ice Cream Man! My favorite person is the person in the window. He's like, get your dad a fudge bar, and give me some, and then take this, and then change, give me some, and give me Bob Pop, and then. That's my favorite part of it, when he's doing that part. That is hilarious. And then making fun of each other, the kids, and you don't have a McDonald's burger, and you dropped your ice cream, and oh, it's still so good.
Ice Cream Man!
It's still so good. It's so good.
Well, he was in his day. He was the unchallenged king of Hollywood comedy.
It's not even close.
I mean, that the delirious, whether you know it was raw, was one of the best stand-ups ever.
Yeah. Well, his run from being on Saturday Night Live to then going and doing Trading Places and 48 Hours and The Golden Child, whatever you thought about that movie, doing all that and was still on Saturday Night Live for part of that, and then the stand-up you throw on top of it with Raw and Delirious, his run for 8 years, it's just never been matched.
Yep. And if people, I mean, like you said, it's on Netflix. Netflix is doing Eddie Murphy a huge favor.
They are.
For the younger set, that's all they do is watch Netflix.
Yeah. They're not only doing him a favor, they're also paying him. He's still getting money. Oh, Justin Rose is down to 400 now.
I mean, think about it. Delirious was, God, I'm thinking about how old it was.
It's 82, right?
82, 83? In that range? It's like
I thought it was like 30. 82, then 2 years later for
it's
Raw.
It's almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, almost 40 years ago. I remember sitting next to my parents, my mom's door, as they watched it on the HBO in her room with the door closed, and I sat there and listened to it under the door. So I must have been 12, what year?
83.
83. They didn't want us to listen to it because it was
August of 83.
Yep. August of 83. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that also made that one of the best stand-ups ever is his delivery and his body language. I mean, he sold the jokes.
87. He had complete control of the audience. Plus, he had told those jokes, worked on them for the year leading up to it in all these different clubs. So it was perfect. And then, you know, they tape multiple ones of those and they mix them together too. So that makes it a lot better for the TV ones, but it was, and it's funny, they don't always go well. I don't know if you ever saw Richard Pryor's Live on a Sunset Strip, which was his comeback from the fire. The first take was horrible. I laughed, the jokes weren't very good, he wasn't timing-wise, came back and did it later in the day, same audience, killed him. Just had it going at the moment.
Man, Eddie would be canceled today if he would come back with the full Delirious show.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, yeah. Well, just the Honeymooners. Think about taking something as famous as the Honeymooners and as iconic as Jackie Gleason and having him do what he had him do. Humana, humana, humana.
Yeah.
That would not go over well.
But in 83, we're like,
this
is awesome.
Hilarious. It's so funny.
It is great.
Mr. T, the Jimmy Walker, all that stuff is just
so good.
Thanks for the I'd forgot about the Jimmy Walker.
He got a big buzz in the lip. Jimmy Walker punching the lip. So funny.
Yeah, and there's a couple of words that he couldn't use today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those words aren't accepted anymore.
No. But that, you know, that's like you had the stretch of not only Eddie's being just dominating, but then you had Andrew Dice Clay, Sam Kinison, were coming along. So all of those really, really
we joked
raunchy.
About Dice Clay. Out of those three you just named, Dice Clay by far. Because it's so misogynistic. What's the word I'm looking for? It's so misogynistic. It's so much so that it overwhelms you. And you can't even laugh at it. Because in your back of your mind going, I can't laugh at this anymore. That wouldn't work at all. I think there's stuff that Eddie could do. There's certainly stuff that Sam Kinison could do, his political stuff, easily. But the stuff about women that Andrew Dice Clay did, no way.
And he leaned into that character.
Oh, he did.
Is he still alive?
He became him. Yes. He actually was in a TV show just recently.
Really?
Yes. He was just recently in a TV show.
But nowhere near his kind of character.
He's a different guy now. He's like an older guy that's had kids, and I think he adopted a kid as part of the show or something. He was in something not too long ago. And I don't think it was on broadcast TV. Maybe it was.
It's when you see somebody like the comedians that rose to fame, and then just completely disappear, like Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, because he was never that funny.
You see Joe Piscopo, and you're like, okay.
He was never that funny. There was a famous event they had at Vegas where all these comedians were there, and it's a huge event. And one of the guys who opens up goes, you know, if they'll bomb at this place, the last comedian alive would be Joe Piscopo because we wouldn't invite his ass. I still remember that.
I don't think Joe ever had plastic surgery either.
Yeah, funny. That's very funny. Plus, he lifted all that weight, and it made him stretch out, too, because he got all big. What was he just in? Just in a TV show. Andrew Dice Clay was. And I remember, he's back. My wife and I were talking about it. Well, he's in A Star Is Born, the movie. He's in there for a couple of minutes. But he's in a TV. He's in a television show that wasn't that long ago.
Seemed like he was once every other month in Omaha performing.
Was he really?
Mm-hmm.
He also was one of those guys that got kicked off Saturday Night Live. Like,
yes, he did.
Did the set and never could do it again. Dice was the name of the TV show. It was on Showtime. It was a Showtime show, yeah.
And
American comedy
him?
Television show created the series stars Andrew Dice Clay as himself. Yep. Showtime ordered 6 episodes for the first season and then brought it back for a second season. It was canceled in 2018.
Yeah, I'll probably pass.
Yeah, I did not see
it. But I may have to now watch, I might have to go to Netflix today and watch Eddie Murphy.
Go back and
Killers.
Watch that?
Yes.
You should do it. It's worth it, man. It is definitely
Because they released like a 25th anniversary edition. Was there any update in that or was it
I didn't see that. I don't know. I didn't see that.
Hey, it's in HD.
I missed that. That would be the one thing they could do. They could clean it up.
Ice cream man!
Ice cream man.
Oh, yeah, man.
Here it would be Ding Ding Man!
Have a good weekend, Michael.
All right, man.